It is my great pleasure to introduce Zoe Koyman from the Free Software Foundation. She is the executive director of the Free Software Foundation for some years now. I'm really pleased that she accepted our invitation to come and speak here. And I guess the topic will be something about free software. Thank you very much, Zoe.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Any questions? If you have any questions, please wait for me to come and give the mic. If it's a long question, if it's a short question, I'd like to request Zoe to repeat it.
Sure. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks.
Okay. So, well, it's always nice to be invited, and thank you for having me. It's a little bit harrowing always to walk into a room full of technical people when you're not one necessarily. I know very little about Nix, but I do know that it's reproducible, and I know that that matters for the free software world as well. And I also know that a lot of people that work in reproducible builds are people that actually are affiliated or known with free software already. So is that correct? Like, you're all free software-ish people? More open source-ish people, maybe? There you go. So I am here today to remind you that free software actually matters. And I'm hoping for those people that nodded enthusiastically on the open source bit to convince them a little bit more towards our point of view of things. I am the executive director of the Free Software Foundation. At the Free Software Foundation, it is our mission for all computer users to be able to do everything they need on any computer using only free software in all circumstances. We started 40 years ago in 1985. That's when the FSF was established, and the GNU project started a little bit before that. For those people that don't know what the GNU project is, Richard Stallman in 1983 announced that he was fed up with the development of proprietary software coming into his world of what people then knew as normal software, which was basically all free software, and wanted to make sure that the freedom that came with working in software, so editing it, running it on any system that you like, studying it, that all of that was secured. And to do that, he thought the best way to go about that is just to make my own system, and he dubbed that the GNU project. Then, of course, he needed a way to protect that system, and he developed a concept called copyleft, and in February 1989, he launched the GNU General Public License, and those developed further, and with those, the third version of those were published in 2007, and with that also something called the AGPL, which is the Afero GNU General Public License, which is based on servers. I can give you more information about that later, but this is sort of where we came from. Now, what does free software really mean? It means that you need to have the freedom to run the program for any purpose. It needs the freedom to study how the program works and adapt it to your needs. The freedom to redistribute copies so you can help your neighbor. And the freedom to improve the program and release your improvements to the public so that the whole community can benefit from it. Now, access to the source code is a precondition for that. And how do we protect that? By something called copyleft, which is a general method for making a program or other work free and requiring all modified and extended version of the program to be free as well, so that we may perpetuate that freedom and other people can profit from the work that we have done and from the freedoms that we have received. Now, what does the FSF do? We do advocacy. So part of that is to make sure that free software is a kitchen table issue. And for that, we use the arguments that, especially today, free software matter. User freedoms matter. And technology is developing at a speed and in a way that profits mostly companies and large-scale organizations that have very little interest in what the user experience is or how that user experience develops into the future. And so we try and convince people that with software freedom, you actually have more control over what that means. Now, that is a really big hill to climb because people tend to be satisfied with the conditions that they're given these days within technology. But what we say is even one change, even one objection, and even one person standing up for their user rights is where differences will be made into the future. So we do advocacy, we educate, we teach, we publish, we speak about free software, we talk about digital rights, we talk about privacy, we talk about surveillance, we talk about the right to repair, we talk about the free software philosophy, and we do that in a number of campaigns, so many that sometimes we get a little bit lost on like which areas we're speaking about, because there are a lot of areas in the world that free software matters in right now. And what we tend to say is that free software actually is a precondition for many of the things that people are fighting for today. So if you're looking for more privacy, free software is a precondition for that. If you're looking for environmental change and sustainability, free software is a precondition for that. And I can go on. So some of the issues that we care about and advocate about are listed on these pages. So on the left side, you'll find the things that we aim to achieve and the freedoms that we aim to protect. And on the right side, you'll find the abuses that we commonly encounter in today's technology. We also protect our licenses, of course, because like I said earlier, the free software philosophy stands on and leans on the strength of the GNU General Public License. The GNU General Public License is the license that is used to make sure that people's freedom are perpetuated. It's a strong copyleft license, and it's different from permissive licenses in the sense that the software that you are releasing also needs to give the freedoms to the next person. And of course, permissive licenses don't do that. For the work that we do in this field, of course, is we steward and we publish the GNU family of licenses. We educate people about what the GNU licenses look like, why they are made the way that they are, and we have we review other licenses to say whether or not they are free or non-free. We hold a free software directory, which is a directory that lists a whole bunch of programs that are licensed under free software licenses and where you can find programs that can do pretty much anything that you can set your mind to. So if you're developing a program, it might be nice to want to have that listed in our directory as well. We have Frequently Asked Questions, which is an educational resource about free software and about the GPLs, and it matters. Because it is, at this point, the most comprehensive list of information that we have about what the intentions of free software are, and it is referred to a lot by lawyers and in court cases to this date, and the FSF is seen as the primary holder of that information, and so we do our best to keep up with current technology and developments within both the technological space as well as in educational and legal spaces to make sure that what we are saying is reflected in those resources. So we also, of course, do compliance. work. So we work with a lot of different organizations to get them into compliance with the GPL. And then we also work, in some cases, we have to step up that work and actually take legal action. And so an example of that is where we recently filed an amicus brief for the Neo4j fee sui case, which is a case where Section 7 of the GPL is under debate because someone added in a restriction to the GPL, which is something that, according to Section 7 of the GPL, the downstream users can remove. That is a discussion that is currently in the courts, and the FSF has given our opinion on the topic, and we hope that that helps the court and the judge lean towards the right decision to protect software freedom there. We also are involved in the Visio case, which is a Software Freedom Conservancy case, which is about really releasing the source code to free software. And one of our frequently asked questions was up for debate in that case, and the FSF was deposed to protect the interpretation of software freedom and make sure that large-scale companies like Visio don't get an opportunity to misinterpret the GPL or the intention of free software to their gain. So that's work that we do on the technical field. We, of course, hold the copyright to many of the GNU packages. We enforce our licenses and encourage any legal mechanism available for obtaining complete and corresponding source code. We support enforcement by any legal means available to users, and we work closely with organizations, of course, like I said before. Then technical work that we do is we maintain the free software definition, including how emergent technologies affect the four freedoms. That is general work, not necessarily technical work, but there is a lot of technical analysis that goes into understanding what developments mean for the free software definition. And right now, one of our focus points is, of course, the free machine learning application criteria that we are working on, because we need to apply the free software definition and the four freedoms to what we know will happen in the free machine learning world. That's a challenge, and we've accepted it. So we're working on that, and we published already some work on it. We'll be working more on that. We also fiscal sponsor the GNU project, another project, and we support their infrastructure. We do free JavaScript work, so we try and educate people about the consequences and intentions of using JavaScript on many of their web pages. And we have currently two apps that are working to help people protect themselves from non-free JavaScript, so that it would be Libre.js and JShelter. We also do direct free software development, and we run only free software for operations and for anything that we do, from our internal documentation system to our phone system and our video conferencing. Now, this is the part where I try and convince you to use the term free software and not open source. So as many of you know, but I also know from talking to technical crowds more often, that there are many strong supporters of the concept of open source. And I think it's important to take a step back and understand that open source is actually a concept that comes from the concepts of free software. And there isn't actually that much of a difference between the actual applications of things. So a lot of the software that is named open source is actually also free software, and the other way around. A lot of the licenses that are on the Open Source Initiative's licensing list are actually also free software licenses, and the other way around. But they represent different values. So where many people talk about open source, they talk about adaptability, the freedom for having many developers work on it and improving it, increased security because of those reasons, all of those things. And all of those things are also benefits of free software, only we talk about freedom. Because when it comes down to it, we believe that any person should have the freedom to run, to modify, and distribute changes to the software. This is a freedom that the Open Source Initiative and many of the open source supporters also support. It's just that we keep bringing people back to that one word, freedom. And we do that on purpose, because we believe that when you start there, you can grow from there and build whatever it is that you want and share it. So why talk about freedom? Because we're talking about people's essential freedoms. Like we said before, free software is a precondition to many of the issues that people are currently advocating for. So privacy, the environment, generally just having the freedom to do what you want with your technology, user control, lockouts, all of those things are all things that software freedom is a precondition for. The other thing is we want to make sure that we focus on helping others. The work that we got from people is worth giving back for. So we stand on the shoulders of others, and we help others, and that is, of course, incorporated in freedom too. Then social solidarity, same thing. Sharing, collaborations, those are all things that we want to focus on, the things that we want, values that we want to give to people and talk about with people. And then we want to talk about ethics and not necessarily about people's profit margins. Those are all there. Like I said before, a lot of the software that is called open source is also called free software. It's just that when we talk about it, we want to focus on improving people's relationships. We want to talk about improving the world. We want to talk about improving technology so that users can gain from it. So while we can talk a little bit about open source. So open source, like I said before, was initiated from a group of people that were actually staunch free software supporters and then decided that they needed something a little bit more sellable to the world. And so open source was born. They focus on practical values and avoiding confrontations. They stop at share. And today in our community, a lot of people who started the open source movement actually talked about the fact that free software is a confusing thing, because free means gratis for a lot of people, and that's not necessarily something that they wanted to promote, because that's not something that businesses like to hear. But today, actually, the things that we were as free software movement accused of is actually something that is happening in the open source community as well. Now, this is, of course, also a sign of the positive developments and the gains that open source as a movement has achieved. But it is something to be very, very conscious about. So when you're talking about open source, when you're talking about free software, what exactly are you talking about? Because if you bring it back to the core of where we're coming from, then we are really talking about the four freedoms or the OSI definition. We're not talking about source available. We're not talking about open science related technology. We're not talking about open weights. We're not talking about open name something. We're talking about something that already has a defined definition, and it comes from a philosophy that was born from freedom. So now, of course, we're in machine learning territory, and that is making things even more confusing. So OpenAI, of course, started everything with being called open in the first place, which is absolutely not what they are. Then we've got Llama, who, of course, is very good at promoting themselves as open source, not what they are. And then we have DeepSeek, which is something that is very close to what we would like to see, but not quite yet. Then there is confusion about models and licenses. Can a model actually be licensed? Because we see models being licensed, but it's not actually a given that that's the case, because there's no courts that have made any decisions on this yet. So what we see, we also need to take with a little grain of salt right there. And then, of course, there is confusion and debates about the rights of usage. Can machine learning systems actually be built upon the work of others the way that we have for a very long time? Also, that is something that hasn't actually fully been decided yet, although the courts are leaning towards yes. And I have to say, as the Free Software Foundation, we also tend to be leaning towards yes. And I'm happy to take any questions on that. So, I quote Marshall McLuhan, who wrote this Medium is the Message. He wrote this, and I don't agree with all of the things that he said, but this sentence to me is always a good reminder of why what we say matters and the terms we use are something to think about. So in understanding media, it matters not why we are taking a train journey or where we are going on the train. These are irrelevant side issues which only divert us from noticing the train's real cultural significance. Its real significance is the medium is the message, the way it changes our perception of the world. So it's not about what you do with your tool, but it is about the tool itself. And for us, it matters that that tool gives us user freedom. What is the dominance of proprietary software doing to our perception of society, of ourselves, and of what we should be allowed to do with our technology? Profit margins are prioritized over privacy, over user rights, and over dignified technology use. Are the tools you're using and making helping to make a statement for change? I would love it if you would ask yourself these questions. And that was the bulk of my talk, and I hope I've convinced people in this room to at least start using the word freedom or question it themselves a little bit more. Or at the very least, given you a bit of history on where the terms that you are using are coming from. I'll take any questions.
Thank you very much. So, yeah, I see one.
Thank you. So, you were talking about making more free software and, like, using it. My question is, how do you solve this problem with smartphones? And do you have any suggestion, like what someone should do to free the smartphone, to make it truly free software, including bootloader and firmware?
Yeah, it's a great question that I wish I would get in a month from now, because I would love to talk more about it. Then I'm going to stand here, because then I can see you. So mobile phones are, of course, an issue. One, we have a lot of mobile phone operating systems developing right now with a lot of free software in them, but of course there are always blobs that aren't free, and that's an issue. And of course then you're also talking about the modem, and that's an issue as well. So we know, like, we also know that as the FSF, for the people that know our organization and or are slightly negative about our organization, we know that we are often accused of not being the most progressive, not understanding the real world, all of those things. We know that mobile phones are a challenge, and our stance has been for a very long time, don't use it. But we also know that that's not realistic. So we are taking steps to just research what we can do in this field and space, and keep an eye on our pages, because I am quite excited about the fact that, you know, we're diving into this this area, because it's a field where work and development matters, because it's not impossible to run a free operating system on a phone, and it's a step-by-step kind of thing. So
I saw your hand.
A bit of a related question, but not completely. You said that at the Free Software Foundation, you only use free and open source software. Do you share this experience and recommendations that other organizations could look at in order to do something similar?
Sorry.
You only use open source, free and open source software in your organization.
Yeah.
Do you share this experience and tips for other organizations, and where can I find this?
We have a repository with a lot of information on Savannah and on libreplanet.org. We publish a lot of information as well, of course. And if you have any specific questions, we're always happy to answer. It's funny because we we do everything with free software, and often that's so normal for us that we forget that people might find that interesting. So then we have to like take a step back and write something down, like how are we doing this, and then publish it. So it can be a little bit haphazard or unorganized the way that we release this information, but we do. Like there is, like I said, a repo, which is probably the most comprehensive resource that you'll find, with a lot of information on it. And then there's publications on a lot of topics from the tech team. So at least twice, three times a year, they take one major topic that they're working on and then publishing about it. So we published about freeing up all of our biases. We published about just recently the work that we're doing to protect especially our repo-based services from web crawling in a free way and things like that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi. Thanks. That was a great talk. So I love the philosophy, but I was just wondering if you could sort of say anything about how you imagine like the development of software actually being funded with it all being, say, free software.
Yeah. So it's the... well, the corporate world is, of course, I have a product and I sell it to you. We're not against you doing that at all, but we do know that that's, you know, it's hard to offer an exclusive service that makes people come to your organization or your company only to do that. Although it does happen. So there are actually companies that are profiting and running a commercial business based on the fact that what they're offering is more comprehensive or more exclusive or just better quality than any of the other services, even though it's free software. And beyond that, of course, we see a lot of organizations that run on a donation system. So pay what you believe is its value. I mean, the FSF itself runs on that system. Now we're a nonprofit, so I know it's not comparable. But there are actually also organizations doing a really good job. And we, like I said before, we're not against offering a service for a payment at all. But I understand, like, you're hinting at the fact that it's a challenge to keep that service or that product that you're selling of better quality, of better, that people just sort of end up being able to get whatever it is that they want outside of that. But we have seen in history that there are definitely companies who are able to stay ahead with their product from every other organization that is sort of distributing a similar package of software. So we're all for it. We know that it's not the same as, you know, opening a little shop and selling your products as is, but we do believe that if you push a world that is built on idealism, then maybe we also need to make some changes in our corporate mindsets.
Hello. Thank you very much for the talk. And also thank you for acknowledging our existence by being present here. Lots of questions. I'll start with a short one. The right to use software to any purpose means as well the right to use the technology to run killer drones, mass surveillance infrastructures, big finance infrastructure, which has been a controversial matter in the Nix community as well. Where, with and without your FSF hat on, where do you stand on this trade-off between freedom and the consequences?
Yeah. I was warned about this question. So at the FSF, we actually have a pretty strong position in the sense that we believe software freedom above everything. We are not, like, we are very good at determining what that freedom should look like. We're not very good at determining what freedoms people shouldn't have. There are institutions and governments and lawmakers who are able to do that work. And so we have to rely on those people also, because that, of course, is an international problem and not just a local one. So at the FSF, we say ethical licenses are not free licenses.
So
So in the slides, you mentioned licensing of AI models themselves, but I want to ask if the FSF has a strategy to enforce code generated as AI outputs. Do you have a strategy, or are you waiting for legal precedents on this?
Sorry.
Imagine a company uses GPL code to train an AI model, mm-hmm. and I generate code with it that's really similar to a GPL code, but I can use it commercially without actually open sourcing my code. Does the FSF know how to enforce that case, or are you waiting for legal precedents on the topic?
I still don't understand your question.
So
I'm sorry.
So the GPL strictly prohibits me taking code that's GPL licensed and getting commercial products without sharing them freely, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that's obviously already legal actions you can take to prevent that. But what happens if instead of doing that, I train an AI model on that code and just use the AI model to produce my products in an unfree way? Is there a way the FSF Foundation is going to enforce that, or are you waiting for legal precedents on AI outputs?
Yeah, we are dependent on legal decisions for that, yes. We of course, believe that if you train your model on free software, then it's the right thing to do to release that as free software as well, of course. But your question is, in a pure situation, if you run an AI system or a machine learning system on basically only free software, I think that it's pretty safe to assume that the makers of that model would probably license it under free software again as well. But in the real world, of course, your question becomes a bit more complicated when it's actually proprietary and free being mixed there, and then it's a soup that you have a lot of a harder time determining sort of what the outcome is. And so we have to, if you ask me, I'll say just make it free software.
Mm-hmm. Nix began largely as an attempt to resolve the dependency hell issue, and the inspired GNU Wix project is even more vocally explicit about trying to manage the full bootstrap chain, more principled than Nix packages, for instance, which is all essentially an acknowledgement that the right to modify software does not come for free. It is not just about putting on a GPL license. Software has to be adjusted and made to accommodate
users'
modification ability. How could FSF reflect that in their for fundamental rights or any other principles that they advocate for?
Reproducible builds and these concepts that you talk about are builds that we fully support at the FSF and as free software. We think it's work that is very valuable. It's work that allows other people to use the software that you're actually developing in a much more efficient way than a lot of other programs that are being developed. I think we, as the Free Software Foundation, we can say that much, but stop short of going, and all free software should be reproducible. I think also because we also want to support the smaller, you know, groups, the small projects, the amateurs, those people that are not necessarily technically as equipped or even producing something that needs to be reproducible all the time. And I don't think we necessarily need to exclude those people to be able to fully support the work that you're doing. We exclude a lot of people already in our community, so I think.
Yeah, Zoe, may I ask a follow-up question to the one that this gentleman asked before?
Yeah.
So your last statement was that an ethical software license in the strict sense, is not a free license. Mm-hmm. But somehow in my mind, there's a bit of a paradox there, because for me to choose a free software license is an ethical choice for me, right? So it is a bit, you know, people choose this license because of an ethical leaning. It's not because of a commercial one. They want to see a better world, whatever that means. And there, I see many people who think that, hey, you know, freedom means, you always ask yourself, freedom for whom? Right, and so I don't know. Maybe it make is there is this something that the Free Software Foundation thinks about? That okay, how do we you say government? It's a job of government, but many governments are in the hands of robber barons, right? So we don't really subscribe. Many people don't subscribe to these views. Mm-hmm. Is there a way? I don't know, to tweak a free software to do this? It's a hypothetical question. Mm-hmm. You know.
So, I mean, yes, of course we think about this, but we as the Free Software Foundation, we have 40 years of history of deciding, of telling people what we think is right. So, I mean, if anyone is qualified enough to do that, it's us. But, no, that's a joke, because the thing is that we also know that we don't own the word ethical. We don't own the word freedom, necessarily. We think we have a pretty good idea of what is ethical, and we think we have a pretty good idea of what is free. But who's going to protect people from our ideas when they're not necessarily ethical, even though we say they are? And that's, I think, the space where the FCF has decided to take a step back and really leave that to indeed the authorities. And I know that often we don't agree with the authorities, and as the FSF, we also, you know, sometimes say, like, object to that. And we definitely don't necessarily say, oh, bow and just take no for an answer or whatever. But we are realistic enough to say that a lot of people that create software licenses that have some ethical nature in it, those people, they're like fully grounded in what we believe is ethical as well. We also, you know, want a no bombs, no capitalism over other people's backs, no, like, those are things we all support as well. But when that area gets a little bit more gray about which groups of people can or cannot use software, or indeed, like, if something that is scientific but pushes the boundary of what we think is natural or good, then you're in a space where we feel we don't have a say on whether or not that should be free. And so we need to give that discussion back to the world and trust on lawmakers. And that's just, I mean, it's just an area that would be too much responsibility to give to one organization.
Thank you very much.
Hi.
Yeah, super quick question. How do you advocate for the security in FOSS in general? I mean, I understand you advocate for the free or libre part, but how, from your perspective, how do you talk with corporations, for instance, about security in general for software?
Well, not my expertise, but we, I think a lot of our, I think actually reproducibility is something that we really sort of look at when we talk about best practices. And so that's definitely something that we look at. And then, of course, yeah, I mean, we follow the new law developments and new mandates that come out to sort of determine what security is or isn't, and then see whether or not we can work through that ourselves as well. I think security is a challenge for proprietary and for free software, really. So probably same.
I have a question about the. Let me start over. The free software is something about the ability to modify and distribute users' own version of the software, right? But This originates from the people with technical background. There's people who don't know about how to code, how to modify this. This is about knowledge. And more importantly, in this day and age, the modern software are getting more and more complex with more dependencies, more complex tool chains. Mm-hmm. Although many people here work to make this simpler, but we have seen very complex software in our daily life. Like, it's very demanding to compile a Linux kernel, and it's almost impossible to compile Chromium, Firefox, AOSP on a normal desktop device. And this is even more the case when it comes to large language models. You have mentioned that DeepSeek's open source model is ethically better than Meta's, and Meta's is ethically better than OpenAI's. But
I didn't say that.
You,
I don't do ethical letters, basically.
Okay, at least you say DeepSeek, their license is.
No, I get what you're saying.
Is closer to what we want as free software. But what if, even if they did publish everything, like their internal training code, their data set, but we don't have, but we as normal people or as small organizations, we don't have the GPU clusters to retrain it. We don't have the knowledge to audit, to review, to reproduce the build. In this case, what is the meaning of the right to modify and redistribute?
Well, it depends on what level of software you're talking about. Like, if you're talking about a small package that you can build yourself, then that software freedom matters. When it comes to a large package or a large system that you personally cannot necessarily reproduce because you don't have the system or the technology or the finances to do so, then maybe someone else can. And that brings me back to the question also, like, where can people earn their money? I mean, there are people that have skills, that have the capacity, that have the technology, that have the finances to be able to facilitate things like that. So why can we not imagine a world in which, okay, I cannot fix it myself, but I can go to maybe five different options of people that I could trust that could do that for me, that can either check whether or not my software is reliable and or can fix it. And I understand that that gap of, like, being able to install and build a package that, I don't know, does some simple calculating on your computer towards what you're saying, like, I don't know, a web browser like Chromium or even a full machine learning system, that gap just keeps getting bigger. But as the Free Software Foundation and as the free software definition, we try to go back to the core of things. And sure, it means that not everyone can sit down and modify their software, but the fact that some people may be able to matters. The fact that you can get people and resources together to make those changes to an existing system, it matters. And so if we're not fighting for every person individually, then we're fighting for us as a community.
So. Great. Thank you very much, Zoe, for being here and for answering all these questions. Let's thank the speaker again.